Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie.
I'm Dr. Richard.
And we were just trying, we're laughing because we're trying something new, and I have no idea if it worked.
This is a good day to try something new, isn't it?
It is something. It is. Mixlr has a new feature where we can include intro and outro music on Mixlr while we're going, and I was trying it, and I have no idea if it was effective or not. So, you know what? Sometimes you have to step outside your comfort zone and try something new.
I'm saying that's why I said today's a good day for that, because the topic today is stepping outside your comfort zone.
You know,
which is, you started your day by stepping out of your comfort zone.
I did. Okay. From the very first thing I did this morning, I was outside of my comfort zone.
Which means we would never ask you to do something that we don't do.
That's right. Okay. That's right. If you're listening to this and you're thinking, what are these guys talking about? Yeah. Well, you know, we do it every day too.
We do what we ask you to do.
That's right. So today's topic is stepping out, leaving your comfort zone. And over the past couple of weeks, we have talked about a variety of obstacles to that get in your way of achieving goals, making changes that you want in your life, or achieving some goal that you want in your life. And we've talked about it in a couple of different ways. We talked about fear, right? That was a couple of weeks ago. We talked about the fear of failure, the fear of success, lots of different fears. We also talked about last week the idea of the stop and go system that's in our brain that sometimes makes it difficult for us to stop old habits and begin new habits.
Right. Yeah, that was a good reminder that our brain is much better at doing things than it is at stopping things. We talked about habits and resolutions and goals, that it's always easier, that what the brain wants to do is to do something. It's an active pursuer, and it wants to do something, and it's much easier to do something than it is to stop something.
Right.
So I'm glad we had that reminder last time.
Well, and we're going to build on that today, because as you're working towards your goals, and part of this is going to begin with a few assumptions, right? I guess the first and primary main assumption is that any goal that you have, anything that you're trying to do, is different than what you're trying to do, what you're doing now.
Right.
Okay. So if you have the goal of going back to school to become a doctor, or to major in engineering, or to become a nurse, or something like that, part of the assumption is that you're not doing that now. I think that's a little bit obvious, because if you were doing that now, it wouldn't have to be a goal.
Right.
So when you're thinking about these goals that you have, and that you're working towards them, and you're trying to create some new things in your life, what's going to happen is, as soon as you apply some of the principles that we talked about last time, you're going to very quickly find yourself outside of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. You're going to find that you're expecting yourself to do things that you don't typically do. And that makes us a little anxious.
Right. And you're talking about setting goals.
Correct.
And just as a reminder, where this whole thing began was in January, the first month of the new year. We were talking about setting goals rather than making resolutions, that resolutions don't typically get us very much. And
right.
We need to think in terms of goals rather than resolutions. I talked to my 16-year-old daughter about setting goals rather than making resolutions for this year. And that's what we're talking about here with goals, is that the reason goals become achievable is that you can divide it into sub-goals.
Right.
But even taking those smaller steps, we're asking ourselves to step out of our comfort zone. It's not a huge step. It's not a leap out of our comfort zone, but it's still a step out of our comfort zone. And that's what we want to talk about today. Why is it difficult leaving your comfort zone?
Right, right. You know, there's a very common or popular quote from that's attributed to Einstein. That says, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. Right. And so when we think about, as we're talking about these goals and these expectations that we're placing on ourselves, what we're doing is we're trying to do, or we're hoping to try to do something new with the goal of experiencing something different. And like you said, Richard, you know, as we're doing that, as we're making that happen, we very quickly get to the edge of our comfort zone and we're looking into this wilderness of uncertainty. And uncertainty elicits anxiety. It makes us stressed. It makes us nervous. It makes us hesitant. And it makes us want to turn around and go back to that comfortable place where we typically live.
That's right. Right, right. Mm-hmm.
So when we're leaving...
You did use the term uncertainty.
Yes.
Right. That's a key word here. One of the words we're going to keep using over and over again is uncertainty. We'll explain why in a minute.
Yes. So, all right. So when we're thinking about this, we are, over the last couple of weeks, let's kind of bring us up to where we need to be with these goals. Last week, we talked about the importance of writing it down. Okay, so if you have a goal, if you have something that you want to achieve, one of the first things you need to do is articulate it as clearly as you can. Write it down. What does it look like? What does it smell like? What does it taste like? What does it feel like? Write it down in as much detail as you can so that it becomes real.
Right.
Once you have it clearly articulated, that ultimate goal that you have, the next thing we need to do is break it into smaller pieces because we can't go from 0 to 100. We have to go from 0 to 1. And so if 100 is our goal, we need to figure out what those small steps are between 0 and 100 so that we can get there. When we were doing prep this morning, we were talking about, you know, climbing Mount Everest. Neither of us can put on a pair of shoes right now and go climb Mount Everest. It would be something really cool to do, but even if it's one of our goals, we can't achieve it right now because we're not prepared for it.
Right.
We have to train. Mm-hmm. And so when you know what that ultimate goal is, whatever that ultimate goal might be, we need to figure out what those smaller steps are to work to there.
That's right. And the other thing about those small steps, and the reason we keep saying you have to write it down, is because you have to be able to measure it in some way.
Right.
You have to know when you've accomplished it. That is to say, you have to be able to measure it. And Peter Drucker, I think he's as a one of those business guru consultant types who writes books about what it takes to run companies, famously said, we manage what we can measure.
Right.
Which is very true.
Yeah.
My gosh, look at public schools today. You know, everything that's being managed today is something that can be measured.
Right. Okay?
Doesn't mean it's important. It just means it can be measured. But in our own life, in our personal life, you have to be able to measure, because if you can measure it, then you'll manage it.
Right.
Okay. And that's what we're saying, is that if you have these sub-goals, like running a marathon, people don't put on a pair of running shoes and run a marathon. People put on a pair of running shoes and run 1 mile, and then 5 miles, and then 10 miles. Didn't you run a race? You ran one the other day.
Right.
10K. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's, what, 6.5 miles? And so your next goal will be 12 miles or maybe a half marathon.
Okay? Right.
And so you gradually get your body, but you have to be able to measure those things. You
right.
have to know, okay, this is 6 miles. Now I'm going to run 12 miles. Now I'm going to run 18 miles. You break it up into measurable units and you accomplish those sub goals
right.
in measurable units.
Right. And the idea here is if we think about this in, if we try to create the mental picture of what we're talking about, you know, so you're sort of standing on the edge of your driveway and you're looking mm-hmm. down the road and you see where you want to go. I mean, it may be, mm-hmm. you know, sort of like Oz, right. way yeah. down.
The yellow brick road.
Way down right. there. But what you have to do is you have to get onto the road and get going. Well, you're not going to be able to just start going down the road. Mm-hmm. You're going to go out on the road a little bit, then you're going to come back.
Right.
Then you're going to go a little bit farther, then you're going to come back a little bit. And each time you venture out a little bit farther, mm-hmm. your comfort zone expands.
Right. Right.
But it requires that little bit of discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it requires that little bit of uncertainty, that little bit of risk that you have to take to get out there mm-hmm. to expand that comfort zone to hopefully and eventually include your goal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's the process that we're talking about. The process of taking your comfort zone, pushing those boundaries out a little bit so that you do grow that comfort zone and you begin to find comfort in other places.
That's right.
You know, we do this often with people who have to, people who have problems with public speaking. And, and yet you're in college and your professor is requiring you to do a talk in front of the class or a presentation in front of class. You know, the thing that you have to do is you have to begin with the first person. You know, you stand in front of, even if that first person is you in the mirror.
You in the mirror,
right. You're talking to yourself in the mirror and doing it that way. And then maybe your parents or your friends or somebody else, and you're standing in front of them and you're talking. And then you expand that out a little bit more and a little bit more. And then by the time, hopefully, it's time for your presentation, you're able to stand up in front of, you know, the 15 or 20 people in your class, and you're able to get through it. But it is all just incremental steps. You have to push those bounds
and making your comfort zone larger.
Right.
I think what our, you know, what we really want to do is we want to make our comfort zone as large as possible.
Right.
I mean, if you, it's a pathological condition when your comfort zone is your own house.
Right.
That's called agoraphobia.
Right.
Okay. So it's pathological when your comfort zone is that small. So what we always want to be doing is making it larger and larger and larger. The fact that you leave your home and go to college, you're expanding your comfort zone.
Right.
And you leave college and get a job, you're expanding your comfort zone. Then you get a job in another country, expanding it even further.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, that's the goal, is to make your comfort zone bigger.
Right. And our comfort zone includes not just the things that we're doing, but it includes our ability to manage stress, our ability to manage unexpected situations. So, both Dr. Richard and I teach at the college and graduate level, and there are often times when we have students who can't manage some of the stress from the class. And I know you have, and I have received phone calls from parents, parents of graduate students. Okay, right. these are students in their mid to late 20s, sometimes early 30s. And we're getting phone calls from their parents because they got a poor grade on an assignment. And the student just can't, their comfort zone is outside of their comfort zone to approach us directly and say, hey, you know, I got this poor grade. What's up? You know, what did I do? What can I do better next time? What did I misunderstand? You know, you have to be able to get outside of that comfort zone. So our goal today is to talk about how to deal with that. The first step in dealing with issues related to our comfort zone is, again, exactly what we talked about last week. You got to write it down. You have to articulate it. You have to identify it. What happens when you do that is you begin to demystify the process. You know, using Mount Everest as the example. You know what? Let's use an easier example of the marathon. You know, when you think about running 26 miles, okay, 26 miles. That's a long ways. And you think that's hours of running, okay? So
many hours.
Sometimes many hours. And when you think about that, that seems like such a daunting, terrifying process. First of all, why would anybody do that? You may be your question. But second of all, if that is one of your goals, you would think, how am I ever going to get there? Because I can barely do a couple of miles right now. Well, as you begin to break it apart, and you know they've done this a lot of time in a lot of different. There's a lot of different sources of training programs to prepare for marathons, and what all of them do, they start with day one.
Yeah.
Day one, you know, jog for a mile.
Right.
Day two, rest. Back to your comfort zone. Day three, run for 3 miles. You know, or go for 3 miles, run as far as you can, then finish the 3 miles walking if you have to. Day four, rest, back to your comfort zone. And so each time you're going out a little bit farther, a little bit farther, and over the course of a couple of weeks, now your comfort zone is going to include 3 miles. And so day, you know, the first day of week three may be run 3 miles.
Right.
So each time it gets a little bit farther, a little bit farther. And by the time you get to the end of the training program, which may be an 18-week program, maybe a year-long program, by the time you get to the end of it, you're ready to run 26 miles. And you've trained your body to get there because you've expanded that comfort zone. But it began with breaking down the goal into measurable, meaningful, step-by-step, baby step pieces.
Right. That you can handle.
That you can handle.
So each step is a little bit beyond your comfort zone. Because what we fear is what we don't like, what our brain doesn't like, is uncertainty. And every time you ask yourself to do something you've never done before, you're creating uncertainty. And that's what that's what your body's reacting to is, oh my God, I can't do that. And of course, what we learn in the process is that the challenge that you're facing is always easier to accomplish than you anticipated that it would be.
Right, right.
So it's easier to get there than you think it's going to be, as long as there's small enough steps.
Yeah, I had a patient say something wonderful to me yesterday. We were talking about some of these things, and she says, you know, I never thought about it, but you know, every time you tell yourself that you can't do something, mm-hmm. if you look back, every time you told yourself that you couldn't do something, you ended up doing it.
You could.
Yeah,
right. mm-hmm.
you were able to do it after all.
Right.
Because we tend to get these thoughts into our head that, no, that's way beyond my ability. That's way beyond where I am. And what we're really saying is, that's well outside my comfort zone.
I think that's one of the main points here, is not that I can't do it, it's outside our comfort zone.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, and we're kind of, I'm being cautious that we don't go off on too much of a tangent, but this is part of what we were talking about last week, that you have to imagine yourself being able to do it. I do that process a lot with patients where you know, I get them to close their eyes and imagine yourself there. Imagine yourself doing it. Imagine what you feel like when you're doing it. Because if you can imagine yourself there, you can get there.
Before you can, you have to think you can.
Right,
you
know, right.
Yeah. And that's very true. Because what you're doing is you're pushing your brain. The first step is to get your brain there. Once your brain is there, your body will follow.
Right.
Diving boards and platforms. Mm-hmm. Rule number one is your body goes where your head goes. Your body will follow your head.
Right.
And it's the same with this, is if you can think it, you can do it. You know, you just have to break it up into small enough. So remember, your body's going to follow your brain.
Exactly.
Your brain. Right.
Exactly. So you have to imagine it. You have to be able to think it. And again, that process of writing it down really helps you with that.
Right.
You know, you can't see yourself running 26 miles, but can you see yourself walking a mile? Mm-hmm. If you can see yourself walking a mile, that's the first step.
You know, that brings up another point that I hadn't thought about before. But when we do the writing process, we keep hammering away. You got to write it. You got to write it. I hate to write stuff down. I always rebel against it. But it is absolutely essential. I mean, give up and start writing it down. Stop fighting that battle. But when we do the writing process, there's a famous phrase in writing where we say, you learn to write, but you write to learn. And that means that when you're writing, you suddenly discover what you don't know.
Right.
The writing process itself tells you what you don't know. You thought you knew something, and then you tried to write it down. It's like, oh, wait a minute. I don't know this as well as I thought I did.
I thought I had this
down. Right. I thought I knew this stuff, and now that I'm trying to articulate it, I can't write it. It's the same thing with this. In writing it down, you'll find out what you don't know about yourself. You'll find out where your limits are. When you say, I'm going to write, okay, my first goal is 3 miles. Oh, wait a minute, I can't do 3 miles.
Right.
Let's scale it back to 1 mile. Oh, I know I can do a half because I've done that before.
Right.
So then you write that down. So writing it down also informs you of where your limits are and what your goals should be.
Right.
Okay, so the writing part is really, really important. So stop fighting that battle and start writing it down.
Right, and it helps you be realistic.
Yeah.
You may think unrealistically, you may think, oh, you know what, I can do 3 miles.
Right.
As soon as you start writing it down, it really makes you start thinking, can I?
Do I?
That's right. How long is 3 miles? And then what you find is you start paying attention to how long it takes you to drive different places.
Right.
And you're like, whoa, this is 3 miles? Okay, never mind.
That's farther than I thought.
I'm not going to be able to do that.
No, and you can also go back and say, oh, this is too big, you know, 1 mile to 3 mile, that's way too long. You know, I made that mistake before.
Right.
So I'm going to do shorter increments.
Right.
But if it's in front of me, I can see it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the alternative is correct also. You may do 1 mile and you may say, well, you know what, I need to just go to 2 miles.
Right.
But you may think, you know what, I'm getting back into this pretty good. Let me see if I can go ahead and get the 3 mile. And you push that comfort zone a little bit more, a little bit quicker, hopefully in a healthy and safe way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly you're further along than you thought you were, and you know, again, that's going to create motivation, which we'll talk a little bit about next week. That'll create some motivation and some drive to get you to do more and go faster. So this, we spent a lot of time talking about this from, again, last week, but you got to write it down. That's such a critical, important piece.
Mm-hmm.
The next step is you have to do something when you feel the discomfort. You need to acknowledge going into it that you're going to experience the discomfort. You know, I know when I go running, my biggest task when I go for a jog, because I'm training for a longer run now, but my job right now is I have to push myself through the first half mile.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the first half mile is horrible. I feel like I can't breathe. My legs are asking me, what in the world am I doing? Why am I doing this? I could be home watching TV. Why am I running? After the first half mile, my body says, oh, okay, oh, here we go. We're good now.
Our ancestors spent 2 million years getting out of the rain. Here
right.
You are going into the rain.
Right.
You know, and yeah, that's your body going into rebellion.
So, yeah.
Hey, man, you know, we spent 2 million years learning how not to do this.
He's like, look here, buddy. We worked all day.
Right.
What are you doing? It's dark outside. It's time for bed.
Right.
So I know going into it, you know, when I put on my running shoes, the first thing I'm doing is I'm reminding myself, this first half mile is going to suck.
Right.
It's not going to go smoothly. I need to work through that because I know that once I get through that, then I have a clear impression of how my body is going to do with the run today and how it's going to happen. So you have to go into these processes with that in mind. You have to acknowledge that. Don't create these delusions that, you know what, it's going to be fine because everything is going to be great. I hope that they will be, but you need to be prepared for the discomfort. You got to be prepared for your body, your mind, your brain to kind of buck against the idea just a little bit and say, okay, well, you know, how am I going to handle that then? When that does happen, there's a few things that you can do to deal with it. Again, for me, I know because I've done it enough times now, I know when the discomfort's going to end. And so I am able to apply enough pressure to myself to get through. I run a very similar track each time. And so I know the landmark that I have to get to. That by that landmark, that discomfort will be gone. For other times, for other people, you know, we may not know exactly when that is. And so we need to apply some other principles. One thing is this idea of mindfulness.
Right.
You know, where you settle yourself, you bring yourself under control, you think of where you are, you get acquainted with how your body's working at that moment in time. What mindfulness does is it really centers you to right now. It brings you back to the moment so that you can focus on who you are, where you are, what you're doing, how your body's responding to things, and it relieves stress. It calms some of that activity in the brain, and it brings you back to real life. So starting out with that discomfort, when you don't know how or if or when it's going to end, you need to apply some relaxation techniques, some mindfulness-based types of techniques to calm yourself and bring yourself down under control. Another thing to do is when you are experiencing some of that discomfort, again, it kind of varies depending on what your goal is and what you're doing that's pushing you outside of your comfort zone. Sometimes it's okay to come back to your comfort zone a little bit. You know, it's not all that bad of an idea. You know, our comfort zone, for example, may be resting after work. You know, your comfort zone may be when I get home from work, I go to my recliner and I sit down for a little while. And you're wanting to get out of that comfort zone by exercising. Well, so you go out and you exercise, and your body is not very happy with you, perhaps because of the exercise that you just did. When you get home, it's okay to sit down in your chair. It's okay to come back to that comfort zone a little bit and relax and tell your body, hey, I still like you. It's okay. Mm-hmm. No problem. We're back here. We're gonna push the limits a little bit, but then we're going to come back and we're going to be able to relax a little bit afterwards. Now, I usually discourage people from doing things like going out and exercising and then, you know, going back to your comfort zone of eating a hot fudge sundae, right, just because
that... Don't go back to that comfort zone.
That sort of undoes all the work that you've just done, but finding an alternative to that, again, like we talked about last week, finding something else to replace that unhealthy comfort zone, but is close enough to the comfort zone that your body's okay with it. You know, Richard, you mentioned a quote this morning that I thought was really good about when life begins.
Right.
It says that life begins at the edge of your comfort zone.
That's right. And I wish, that's the second thing I'd like for everybody to hear about this. Life begins at the edge of your comfort zone. You got to get beyond that, because that's where you're going to start to enjoy your life. That's where you're going to start to feel good about yourself, is when you go beyond your comfort zone and you keep expanding that comfort zone.
Right. And what you begin to realize is that there's so much more
right
than what you see in that comfort zone.
Right.
There's so much more to life out there that you can experience.
And we have to understand that, you know, we talk about the neuropsychology of tennis and the neuropsychology of this and... But there's even, in a sense, a neuropsychology of the comfort zone. Because, once again, we want to remind listeners that you're pushing against what your brain is trying to do.
Right.
You know, our brains like certainty. They like order. They like structure. They like predictability.
Right.
Many of you who studied education or psychology recognize the name Jean Piaget. And Piaget told us that children develop, mature, and become better and smarter and stronger and faster by dealing with uncertainty in their environment. And
right,
they're always trying to make sense of their environment. And he even had a word for it called disequilibrium. He
right
said, we're always seeking equilibrium. And he said, when we encounter disequilibrium, that is, when we step outside our comfort zone, we learn something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we call it discomfort. He called it disequilibrium. But what that feeling comes from is our brain wants certainty. Our brain seeks security. Our brain seeks predictability and what it already knows. And so your brain is going to tell you, stay where you are. Stay
right
where it's safe. Because as a species, if we didn't recognize something, we treat it as though it's dangerous.
Right.
Our first response is, if I don't recognize this, if I'm not sure what this is, I'm not going to take a chance.
Okay? Right.
It's like those two cavemen who stood in front of a cow one day and said, I want you to squeeze whatever's in that bag and drink it. That took some courage. You had
right
to get outside your comfort zone to do something, to do things like that.
Right.
Or eat a new food that nobody had seen before. You know, we talked this morning about, we thought tomatoes were poisonous for hundreds of years. People wouldn't eat tomatoes because they assumed that they were poisonous. So the brain automatically withdraws from what it doesn't know.
Yeah.
And so what we're saying to you today is, we want you to step outside your comfort zone. You immediately create uncertainty, and your brain is going to say, don't do it.
Right.
And that's what makes it so difficult, is you're fighting biology. Once again, we talked about this the last 2 weeks. We're fighting biology. Step outside your comfort zone, you're introducing uncertainty. When you introduce uncertainty, your brain's going to fear it.
You know, when you were just giving those examples, I immediately was thinking about, I like watching a lot of those nature documentaries and stuff. And when I think about Africa, the most terrifying thing about Africa to me are lions. Lions just seem, you know, they're fast, they're strong, they can jump, and they
But you'd probably be killed by a mosquito.
Right, probably. Oh, okay. that new thing going. Right. Oh, my gosh. I was watching a documentary, and they were talking about this tribal group, mm-hmm. that, you know, because of the animals and stuff that is around, hunting is somewhat difficult. The animals are so big, it's difficult for them to hunt them. What they do is they find a lion's kill. You know, so lions are sitting there, you know, eating their kill. Right. Three or four of these guys will just start walking up to the kill. And, you know, the lions are sitting there eating. And these guys with nothing more than like a bow and arrow are walking up to this, you know, the dead zebra there while the lions are eating it. And the lions look at these guys like, what are these guys doing?
My friends, is stepping out of your comfort zone.
So when you think about the first guys that were thinking about it,
I got a good idea.
Let's give this a shot. But it is very successful for them because what they found out was that kind of behavior sort of freaks the lions out. They're like, what's going on? And the lions will run away temporarily, you know. They'll run away for a little bit. Long enough for them to get some of the meat so that they can take it back to their...
Tear off a hind quarter and bring it back to
the camp. And then they just walk. They just turn their backs and walk away. And they do this...
Yeah, I'm gonna talk to the first guy who said, hey, I have a good idea.
His friends must have been like, yeah, buddy, you go ahead and do that.
Go ahead. We're right behind you.
But that's pushing it.
That's a good example.
And that's what's really... That helps... them survive. That helps that tribal group survive.
But see, what spurred that is motivation.
Right.
And we're going to talk about motivation next week because motivation is a part of this.
Exactly.
They had to take a bold step or they risk starvation.
Exactly. Okay.
So with enough motivation, you'll step outside your comfort zone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, that's why this process, that's why we mm-hmm. can't view the setting and working towards goals as an arbitrary, just, I'm going to do it.
Right.
It needs to be organized. It needs to be structured because when it is, it makes it real, it makes it valid, and it makes it meaningful to you. And once it's meaningful, that's where some of the motivation, at least the motivation to start, mm-hmm. will begin. Because now it's meaningful, now it's something that I'm going to do, now it's going to happen. Right. When we just say, oh yeah, you know, I want to be, you know, I remember when I was a teenager, you know, the delusion that all teenagers have that, you know, I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 25. There was no plan. There was no structure to it. I had no idea, you know, I still have a hard time even imagining what $1 million is. That's a lot of money. But you think that, you know, we set these arbitrary goals, right. and then we fail at them. We right. fail at accomplishing them, and we evaluate ourselves based on that. Well, I can never meet my goals. Well, what process are you going through, and what are you doing to push yourself outside of your comfort right. zone so that you can accomplish these goals? Mm-hmm. You know, that's a lot of what therapy is. You know, when we mm-hmm. see patients, a lot of what we do is encouraging and therapeutically supporting people to step outside of that comfort zone and explore the world in a little bit mm-hmm. different of a way.
That's right. Because that fear that, I mean, it's so natural to have that fear. And I think that's the first thing that I would like for all of us to acknowledge and to share. You're going to have that fear. I mean, there's no way to avoid that.
Right.
It doesn't matter some of us have bigger comfort zones than others.
Right.
But again, that first step outside the comfort zone, no matter where it is, you're going to be a little bit fearful. You're going to be a little bit intimidated because that's what the brain is going to do. It's going to initially be afraid and it's going to tell you not to. That's your default setting. Don't do it. It might be dangerous.
Right.
And you have to overcome that fear.
Right. I mean, we've done presentations in front of audiences of hundreds of people.
Right.
But I'm not going to walk up to two lions while they're eating a zebra.
That's outside your comfort zone.
It's well outside of my comfort zone. I'm not going to do that. Now, if there was a glass there or something, you know, we can approximate and get closer to it. But, you know, it's tough to imagine.
Right.
But like you said, if there's motivation enough,
Yeah.
If it was that
starving,
or die,
right?
You know, there may be some additional motivation that would push us in that direction. Now, luckily for us, many of the goals that we try to set are not life or death.
Right. Right.
You know,
ours are not walking up to two lions.
Right. Right. Our goals tend to be those things that that have the potential, at least that we hope to have the potential, of making our lives more fulfilling, happier, more satisfying, and that creates a different kind of motivation, again, that we'll talk about next week, but it also requires a slightly different comfort zone. It requires a little bit different of a way of considering what our comfort zone is and how we're going to manage it.
Yeah.
So, okay. So when we're thinking about this.
So what do we do?
Right.
That's what we want to talk about. So what do we do? Well, first of all, you write it down.
Write it down.
Okay, write mm-hmm. down what your ultimate goal is. You kicked one over again here today when you said when we were in high school or college, we wanted to be a millionaire by the time. But nobody said, well, let's make $100.
Right.
Oh, I can't make let's make $20, you know.
Yeah.
Because that would be your first step toward, because when you're 17 or 18 years old, you may or may not have had a job at that point in
right.
your life, you know, so you have no concept of what it takes to get to a million, okay?
Right.
But so that's your ultimate goal, write it down, but then what's the first step going to be, okay? What will your first step be, and when will you achieve that first step? And I think that's the other important thing, is you have to hold yourself accountable
right.
as to when you're going to accomplish the first step. So number one, you write it down. Number two, you have to be okay with a little bit of fear.
Right.
All right. Because your brain is going to tell you not to do it.
Right.
Because once you step beyond, your brain is going to say, whoa, 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 that might be poisonous. That might be bad for you. So but understand, the only thing standing in the way is you.
Right.
I mean, there's the challenge is manageable.
Right.
You're going to make it manageable. The only thing standing in the way is you. You have to overcome your own fear. Okay, so,
right.
and once you've done that, then you can take that first step. Then the next thing is to break it into smaller steps that you can manage.
Mm-hmm.
You know where your comfort zone is. If you don't like talking in front of groups and you have to talk in front of a group, what's the first thing you have to do?
Right.
Talk to yourself or talk to somebody you know. Start rehearsing, start getting it out. And what you're doing is you're expanding your comfort zone until you can get in front of a class and talk.
Right.
It's all possible. But it takes effort. And the first step is overcoming the fear. Second step is to write it down in small steps that you can manage.
Right.
But you have to know where your comfort zone is.
Right. Right. And as you, the more committed you are to it, the more motivated, and
right.
the more likely you are to be able to get yourself through those challenging initial mm-hmm. steps.
And if you're not willing to do that, maybe you don't want it as much as you think you want it.
Right.
You know, it's like losing inches off your waist. You know, you say, well, I want to be a size 8. I want to be a size 4. If you're not willing to do all this stuff,
right.
then do you really have the motivation to do? Is it really that important to you?
Right.
You know? And that's another thing you have to take a good, hard, long look at.
Right.
Is it really that important to you? Because if you're not willing to do this stuff, we go back to the elimination diet. You've developed that elimination diet. And if you're not willing to invest a couple of weeks, maybe it's not that important to you.
Right, right.
Which is okay.
Right.
But you got to know that about yourself.
And be realistic about it.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's always, patients always look at you a little sideways when you say, really? Is that really your goal? And they look at you like, what?
Yeah,
what kind of therapy is that?
Right.
It's like, no, I'm not trying to discourage you. What I'm trying to do is help you understand mm-hmm. that for you to accomplish that goal, for you to get where you're talking about going,
mm-hmm.
it's going to require a lot of work. And two, you're going to have to push yourself a little
mm-hmm.
bit
mm-hmm.
because you're talking about, you know, doing things that you don't do now.
Right.
And you got to be okay with that.
Mm-hmm,
you're going to have to overcome some of these barriers that's going to interfere with you doing that. It may have nothing to do with fear. It may have nothing to do with stopping old habits.
Mm-hmm.
It may just have to do with, I'm not used to feeling like this.
Right.
I'm not used to experiencing this. this feels weird.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be okay with that. And you have to then embrace that to, again, expand that comfort zone out a little bit farther to meet those goals.
You know, we work with a lot of, you mentioned earlier that we work with a lot of, we teach at the college and university level, and we work with a lot of college students. And they're always thinking about, well, what do I want to be, or what do I want to do, or do I want to go to graduate school, or do I want to go here, do I want to go there? And a lot of students talk about, well, I'd like to go to medical school. The first thing they say is, well, I can't be a doctor. I can't.
Right.
Because they're imagining a doctor at the end of his or her training.
Right.
Okay, so they're thinking, well, I can't be that. And we're, you know, and you have to say, no, not tomorrow. You can't climb Mount Everest, you can't run a marathon, and you can't be a doctor tomorrow,
right.
Okay? But that's not what we're asking you to do. And say, well, I couldn't get into medical school. And we said, well, we're not talking about medical school.
Right.
We're talking about an undergraduate degree. Well, I can't get all A's. Well, now, wait a minute. You say you're not good in math. Well, how about if you take math in the summer?
Right.
You know, where you have one course and you focus completely on one course.
Right.
And you get a tutor. Can you get an A in math? Yeah, I could probably do that.
Okay. Right.
So you break it down.
Right.
That's what we mean about breaking it down. Then you say, well, I could never get into a medical school. Well, maybe you can't get into Johns Hopkins. Maybe you can't get into Stanford. Maybe you can't get into Harvard. But those aren't the only three medical schools in the country. In fact, there are medical schools in other countries who
right.
would be happy to have American students. There is always a way.
Right.
It may not be, you know, Duke, Harvard, Yale, and Princeton. It may not be in that order, but there are places that you can go.
Right.
Break it down into smaller goals.
Right. And again, it, during this process, what you find is that there are many other alternatives.
There's always another alternative.
To what you want.
There's always another way.
You right. know, when I worked at the University of South Florida, there was a mm-hmm. colleague of mine who was a research neuroscientist, mm-hmm. and he wanted to get his medical degree.
Mm-hmm.
And but he, you know, he had an extremely busy schedule, and you know, he couldn't do all the rotations and everything that was required. And surely what he did was he found that, you know, in from another country, he was able to work with that medical school mm-hmm. To get all the courses that he needed to take, to meet mm-hmm. all the requirements that he needed to
right.
to make, so that he could complete that program while still working and still doing some of the other things. Because, you know, certainly we're not talking about sort of a telecourse program
right.
or anything like that for medical school. This guy was a neuroscientist working in a medical right. school already. I mean, he had a lot of knowledge and experience mm-hmm. and training already, but they were able to take, that school was willing to take his experiences
right.
and his work
mm-hmm.
and apply it to some of the requirements so that he could meet that goal that he had for himself.
Right. Took a non-traditional approach, but found a way. Taking that first step, that was
right.
But again, he was motivated,
right?
Okay, and he broke it down into smaller steps, and then he found a place where he could do that.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's always available. You just have to keep doing it. If you stay in your comfort zone, none of this is going to happen.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Yeah, Dr. Steve just wrote in the chat room that her experience too is that breaking it down into smaller steps is mm-hmm. so much more helpful
right.
because otherwise it's scary. It's sometimes insurmountable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just
when
looks
you think
like,
of the end,
right?
It becomes too frightening, too unattainable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's intimidating.
Oh.
Intimidating.
Right.
So breaking it down into pieces, taking
right.
those small steps, acknowledging the fear and acknowledging that the anxiety is going to be there, and telling yourself, you know, we just have to endure it for the first half mile.
That's right.
and then we can come back and then we'll be okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And letting yourself, you know, pushing yourself and then coming back and then pushing yourself a little bit further and then coming back.
Mm-hmm.
That type of exercise, mental exercise, physical exercise, emotional exercise, that type of work gets you closer
right.
and closer and closer. And what you find is that each time the increment that you push it is a little bit farther.
Right.
You know, the first step may be the half mile.
Right.
The next step may be the 1 mile, but the next step may be the 3 mile,
mm-hmm.
then 10 mile. You know, you're pushing it further and further, and you progress so much faster when you acknowledge it, accept it, deal with it, and then work through it.
Don't what's your phrase now? Don't be afraid of your fear.
Forget to be afraid.
Forget to be afraid, because you are going to be. I promise you, you're going to feel fear. Your brain's going to tell you not to do it.
Right.
Forget to be afraid.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Anything else today?
That's all for today.
All right. So
it's Friday.
It is Friday. And thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
It's been a rainy Friday. Couple of days here.
Oh yes, it's been soaking in Florida.
Yeah. So, all right. A quick announcement. We have posted everything for our next workshop. Our next workshop is going to be February 18th here at the office, just like last month. Last month was, the one from last week. That was a great workshop. It was on motivation. We're going to have to do that one again. But next month is going to be February 18th. It's a Thursday evening. It'll start at 5:30, run from 5:30 to 7:30. It's going to cover the topic of dealing with test anxiety.
Test anxiety. Why in the world would we want to talk about test anxiety on February 18th?
Well, when I was creating the flyers and everything for it, I looked it up because I wanted to know when our standardized testing starts. And
do standardized testing?
According to the website, the words that they use are, the testing window opens on February.
They did not say that.
Say that.
No, they did not.
The testing window opens on February 29th, which means that starting May 1st, or March 1st, everybody's free game for testing.
Did they really say that?
Yeah.
The testing window opens.
Testing window opens.
It reminds me of one of those
hunting season.
One of those. It reminds me of one of those pizza places in North Beach in San Francisco, the Italian district, where they sell pizza outside of a window. You go up to the window and buy pizza. But that's something desirable. They make it sound like, oh, the testing window is open. Everybody line up because it's going to be so great.
The testing window opens on the February 29th. And so so the workshop is going to focus on ways that you can help your child, or if you're a teacher, help your students, or if you're a therapist and you want to help your patients. Prepare for, deal with, and just cope with the stress that's likely to come. We have those children and those patients and those students who really struggle this time of year, because that anxiety that they've been feeling for most of the year now really is accumulating and really is getting to the point where it's going to be realized, because the dates are going to be released. The student will know on this date.
Schools just keep pushing and pushing and pushing and making kids nervous about they have to do well. And,
right. Yeah, and if you're on Facebook, there's all kinds of stuff out there about the testing and everything.
Sad way to deal with children.
Yeah. So that's the workshop, February 18th, from 5:30 to 7:30. If you're a licensed mental health counselor, licensed clinical social worker, or licensed marriage and family therapist, we'll offer 2 CEUs for if you register and attend that, and then teachers will give you any documentation. It will give you a certificate and stuff. So if your principal will give you the in-service credit for it, we'll offer that to you as well. But if you're just a parent, if you're a parent and you want to learn a little bit about that, come on in.
Come and hear what we have to say and share what you already know. Some of you have had experience with this, and come and share it with the audience, and we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, the discussions that come out of these workshops are very, very helpful for
really
other people.
Enjoyable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, all right, I think that's it.
Okay.
All right. So
have a good weekend.
Have a good weekend. Until next week, I'm Dr. Bernie.
I'm Dr. Richard.
Have a great weekend, and forget to be afraid.
Forget to be afraid.